ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తతో జయముదీరయేత్. నష్టప్రాయేషు అభద్రేషు నిత్యం భాగవత సేవయా భగవతీర్ఉత్తమశ్లోకే భక్తిర్భవతి నైష్టికీ. కృష్ణాయ వాసుదేవాయ దేవకీనందనాయ చ నందగోపకుమారాయ గోవిందాయ నమో నమః.
రీడింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం క్యాంటో 10 చాప్టర్ 84 ఎంటైటిల్డ్ ద సేజెస్ టీచింగ్స్ అట్ కురుక్షేత్ర. టెక్స్ట్ నంబర్ 13.
యస్యాత్మబుద్ధి కుణపేతృదాతుకే స్వదీ కలత్రాదిషు బౌమయిజ్యతి యత్తీర్థబుద్ధి సలిలేన కరిహిచేత్ జనేష్వభిజ్ఞేషు స ఏవ గోకర. యస్యాత్మబుద్ధి కుణపేతృదాతుకే స్వదీ కలత్రాదిషు బౌమ యుజ్యతి యత్తీర్థబుద్ధి సలిలేన కర్హిచేత్ జనేష్వభిజ్ఞేషు స ఏవ గోకర. యస్యాత్మబుద్ధి కుణపేతృదాతుకే స్వదీ కలత్రాదిషు బౌమ యుజ్యతి యత్తీర్థబుద్ధి సలిలేన కర్హిచేత్ జనేష్వభిజ్ఞేషు స ఏవ గోకర. తీర్థబుద్ధి సలిలేన కరిహిచేత్ జనేష్వభిజ్ఞేషు స ఏవ గోకర. యస్యాత్మబుద్ధి కుణపేతృదాతుకే యస్యాత్మబుద్ధి కుణపేతృదాతుకే స్వదీ కలత్రాదిషు బౌమ యుజ్యతి జనేష్వభిజ్ఞేషు స ఏవ.
మతజీస్
యస్యాత్మబుద్ధి
word to word translation. Yasya, whose Atma as his self, Buddhi, idea, Kunape, in a corpse-like body, Tridatuke, made of three basic elements, Sva, as his own, the idea, Kalatra Adishu, in wife and so on, Baume, in earth, Ijya, as worshipable, the idea, Yat, whose, Tirtha, as a place of pilgrimage, Buddhihi, idea, Salile, in water, Na Karihichit, never, Janeshu, in men, Abhigyeshu, wise, Saha, he, Eva, indeed, Ga, a cow, Karaha, or an ass. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: one who identifies his self as the inert body composed of mucus, bile and air, who assumes his wife and family are permanently his own, who thinks an earthen image or the land of his birth is worshipable, or who sees a place of pilgrimage as merely the water there, but who never identifies himself with, feels kinship with, worships, or even visits those who are wise in spiritual truth, such a person is no better than a cow or an ass. Purport: true intelligence is shown by one's freedom from false identification of the self. As stated in the Brihaspati Samhita, Ajnata Bhagavad Dharma Mantra Vijnana Samvidaha Naraste Gokara Gyeya Api Bhupala Vandita. Men who do not know the principles of devotional service to the Supreme Lord should be known as cows and asses, even if they are expert in technically analyzing Vedic mantras and are adored by world leaders. An imperfect Vaishnava advancing toward the second class platform identifies himself with the sages who have established the true spiritual path, even while he still may have some inferior material attachments to body, family and so on. Such a devotee of the Lord is not a foolish cow or stubborn ass like the majority of materialists. But most excellent is the Vaishnava who has gained the special mercy of the Lord and broken free from the bondage of illusory attachments altogether. According to Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, the words Bauma Ijyadi, who thinks an image made of earth is worshipable, refer not to the deity form of the Supreme Lord in His temple, but to deities of demigods. And the words Yat Tirtha Buddhi Salile, who sees a place of pilgrimage as merely the water there, refer not to sacred rivers like the Ganges or Yamuna, but to lesser rivers. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Namavo Mishnupadaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Pashyati Dashatarine. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Kadada Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavranda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. reading from the 10th canto. The sages' teachings at Kurukshetra. So these last few chapters we are discussing the Dwarkavasis. They came to Kurukshetra to observe the solar eclipse, and then they met with the Vrajavasis, and now in this chapter they are meeting the different sages who came to that particular place, and they will be giving different teachings to the Krishna and other people. So in this verse, this particular verse is spoken by Krishna himself, who is actually, why is he speaking this particular verse is that, so the background of this chapter is that Krishna, Balram and all the Yadavas, when they see the sages who have come to Kurukshetra, they receive the sages with great respect. So the previous verses described that how by seeing the sages, Krishna, Balram and the other Yadavas, they actually immediately stood up and then they gave proper guest reception to the sages. So those verses were described. And then after the sages were comfortably seated, after receiving them with the proper Vedic reception, then Krishna is speaking in this verse. He is setting an example that how when a person comes to the holy place, one should make it a priority to hear from the sages present there. So they all come to Kurukshetra, they took bath in the holy rivers. They actually observed the solar eclipse, they gave charity to the Brahmana, they performed so many rituals. But now they are going to actually hear from the sages. So in order to actually explain the importance of hearing from the saintly people in the holy place, so Krishna is speaking this verse. It's a very important verse, which is quoted by Srila Prabhupada in many places in the purports, and he has spoken in many lectures also. So in this particular verse, Krishna says that one who identifies his self as the inert body composed of kapha, vata and pitta. So according to Ayurveda, the body is composed of these three dhatus, kapha, vata and pitta. So one who identifies his self as an inert body composed of kapha, vata and pitta, mucus, bile and air, and who assumes his wife and family are permanently his own, who thinks an earthen image or the land of his birth is worshipable, or who sees even a place of pilgrimage as merely the water there, but never actually takes interest in actually hearing from the saintly person present in the holy place, who are present in the holy place, such people are compared to a cow or an ass. That means they are in the animalistic platform. So in this particular verse, we can see from different angles. One is that this verse is actually emphasizing the importance of hearing from the saintly people in the holy place. So this is a very important principle, because usually many times we observe that like I remember that when we went for South India Yatra, when we had gone to Rameshwaram. So in Rameshwaram temple there were like many, I think 22 kundas, 22 or 21 kundas or 21 wells are there, which are actually considered to be different holy places. So I was just like, and then His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj was giving a lecture there. Just thought came to my mind at that time. So morning we had gone to take the bath in the different holy places. But like in the evening I saw that like lecture had started and like many people are moving here and there, and so I was just thinking, because it's not to instruct somebody, but the point is that that like sometimes we are so particular in taking bath in different holy places, but a spiritual master or a great devotee is actually giving a class, sometimes we are completely oblivious to that fact. So there is a verse in the 5th canto which says that when a person takes bath in the holy rivers, after taking bath for a prolonged number of times, then a person becomes purified. But whereas when a person hears from a saintly person, one's not only external impurities, even the internal impurities get purified at once. So that verse clearly emphasizes the, it actually compares the hearing from the holy person versus actually the, like taking bath in the holy rivers. Because when we hear from a holy person, then we come to know our anarthas, we actually, we get the internal anarthas, we undergo a very rapid purification compared to taking bath in the holy rivers. Yeah, definitely we take bath in the holy rivers, we visit the places, but we should never actually underestimate the power of hearing from a saintly person. And so that is why, like when we see this 9 processes of devotional service, although it's explained that if a person perfects even one of the 9 processes of devotional service, one can actually perfect his life. If a person has actually, just like suppose when you are actually cooking rice, if you want to know whether the rice is cooked, we just have to see one particle of the rice, and if that one particle of the rice is cooked, then understand the whole rice in the whole pot is cooked. So similarly, even if a person has perfected one of the 9 processes of devotional service, like he will, Prabhupada writes in a purport that it is understood that he has perfected all the processes also. But although in that sense, any one process is actually good, but still, the process of hearing is very special, because hearing is the first process, because in order to perform the other processes of devotional service in the right consciousness, only when we hear about the glories of the other process of devotional service, we can actually perform this process in the right consciousness. So Jiva Goswami explains in the Sandarbhas, he says that out of the 9 processes of devotional service, hearing, chanting and remembering, they are the most important of all the processes. And out of the 3, chanting, kirtanam, is considered to be the king among all the processes. And kirtanam can be performed in 3 ways. Kirtan of the Lord's holy names, Lord's pastimes, or the Lord's qualities. But out of the 3, chanting of the Lord's holy names is considered to be the topmost king among all the processes. So therefore, like Shivaram Maharaj explains in a place that, like we might have performed so many other activities of devotional service, maybe many hours of book distribution or many hours of deity worship or maybe different holy places like that. But although one may have performed other process of devotional service, but one should never take chanting very lightly. It does not mean that, oh, I can take chanting lightly, because chanting is the king among all the processes. But then Jiva Goswami says that although chanting of the holy names is the king among all the processes, but hearing is more important than chanting when we see from the sequence of the processes. Because we come to know about the glories of chanting through hearing. We come to know about the glories of chanting or remembering or deity worship through hearing. So therefore, hearing is more important than other processes, because we can perform, when we hear in the right consciousness, we can actually perform the other processes with the right attitude. So, when we talk about like hearing, like in the 4th canto, when Narada Muni is speaking to Prachina Barishar, he says that, Tasmin Makan Mukarita Madhubit Charitra Piyusha Shesha Sarita Parita Shravanti Taye Pibanti Avitrisha Nripagada Karanais Tana Sprishan Ashana Trid Bayashoka Moha. So Narada Muni is telling to Prachina Barishad, saying that you go to that holy place where the rivers of Krishna Katha are flowing in different places, where the different great devotees of the Lord are there and they are discussing Krishna Katha. Tasmin Mahan Mukarita, and from whose mouths Madhubit Charitra, the pastimes of the Supreme Lord are actually emanating in the form of the great rivers. Rupa Goswami quotes this verse to describe Charitra Shravan in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu.
And then he says that Piyusha Shesha Sarita Parita Shravanti. When a person hears the narrations of the Supreme Lord from these devotees, then one will become free from shoka, moha and bhaya. One will become free from lamentation, illusion and fear. So in this particular verse, the word comes as Piyusha Shesha. That means this Krishna Katha is compared to the Shesha, means the remnants or the Mahaprasad of the devotees of the Lord. So according to Vishnu Chakotaku says that the Krishna Katha which comes from the devotees is actually non-different from their Mahaprasad remnants. So Mahaprasad remnants is not only refers to the remnants of Mahaprasad from their plates, it also refers to actually hearing Krishna Katha spoken by them. So it has the same effect. In the case of the Mahaprasad remnants, food remnants, it may be available to only to those people who are actually present. It may be available only to only few quantities, very less. One has to take with the help of their permission. Only for few people it is available. But in the case of the Mahaprasada, in the form of the Krishna Katha, it is available to everyone. It is like unlimited number of people can take, in the sense anybody can actually hear. In the case of the Mahaprasada remnant of Krishna Katha, the devotee is actually eager to speak. In that sense, you don't have to even take a formal permission. In fact, we can actually hear from them. So here in this particular verse, when we talk about the body, so this verse essentially talks about the bodily concept of life. So Krishna says that when a person goes to a holy place but does not actually make it a priority to hear from a holy person, he is also in the bodily concept of life. So when we talk about the bodily concept of life, so one is that philosophically speaking that we may talk about, oh, we are not the body, we are the soul. But another is that psychologically, whether we have accepted this truth or not. Because when we come to the Gita course, maybe one of the first thing we hear about we are not the body, we are the soul. But sometimes we may be psychologically, we may unconsciously practicing the bodily concept of life in our lifestyle. We may theoretically know we are not the body, we are the soul. But practically, psychologically, in the sense that how much we are actually caring for the body or how much actually we are spending for the body. Yeah, definitely the body requires food, clothing and shelter and different necessities are there. But sometimes when we actually overspend, yeah, we need a clothes, but if a person spends, say, 20,000 rupees for a shirt, we may attend the Gita course, etc. So then that means we are still in the bodily concept of life. So, and also when you talk about the bodily concept of life, it is not only actually just referring to the physical body. Even in a spiritual life, sometimes we see that bodily concept of life, it actually enters in different ways. So basically bodily concept of life is like distinguishing a person based on the external body, instead of seeing the spirit soul within. Like when Krishna, the 18th chapter, when he talks about the knowledge and mode of goodness, passion and ignorance, he says that prithak tvetanatu yadhyanam nana bhavan prithak vidan veti sarveshu bhuteshu tadhyanam viddhi rajasam. So when in this verse he talks about the knowledge in the mode of passion. The knowledge in the mode of knowledge in the mode of goodness means, he says that a person, instead of seeing the external body, he sees the spirit soul within. But knowledge in the mode of passion is that when a person sees the, when a person distinguishes based on the external body, instead of seeing the spirit soul with it. So this conception also enters our spiritual life. Sometimes we distinguish, we say, oh, we think, we talk about like, my guru is a Indian guru, or your guru is a Western guru. So therefore my guru is superior to your guru. So you may be chanting Hare Krishna, you may be doing these things, but it is nothing but a bodily concept of life. Or, for example, we may even say, oh, I am connected to this particular temple, in which which is famous in ISKCON. Somebody else is connected to some other temple, which may not be, it's a beginning temple, a small center. So, based on that, we may think ourselves to be superior, or we may judge a person based on who is his guru, or we may judge a person based on which temple he is connected to. So in that way, the bodily concept of life enters even an unconscious manner in our spiritual life also. So therefore, we have to understand philosophical materialism and psychological materialism. So philosophical bodily concept of life is just understanding we are not the body, we are the soul. But psychologically, like we may be practicing bodily concept, we may not be free from the bodily concept of life in different ways. And like similarly, when we talk about scriptures, also talk about other concepts like Mayavad. So there's again philosophical Mayavad and psychological Mayavad. So philosophical Mayavad means, so Mayavad essentially means two things: to bring God to a human platform, or to raise a human being to a the platform of God. To make the Supreme Lord as an ordinary person, avajananti maam mooda manushim tanumashritam, or and calling an ordinary person as God. Basically identifying oneself with God. So that is the philosophical Mayavad. But psychological Mayavad means that when we identify ourselves, when we want to become like, we may not want to become like God, but we want to become like another devotee. We want to become like such and such Prabhu, such and such Mataji, like that. Then that is also, that's actually psychological Mayavad. So you may know the philosophical Mayavad, but how much are we free from the psychological Mayavad tendencies? So because ultimately, like everybody is unique, like we can never become like another, we will have to follow in the footsteps of another devotee, but we can never become like another devotee. So we have to introspect, are we free from the psychological Mayavad tendencies? And like for example, when we talk about the bodily concept of life, in the Bhagavad Gita, right in the beginning, actually Krishna talks about the bodily concept of life. So when Krishna, before he actually gives instruction to Arjuna, Baldev Vidya Bhushan, other acharyas, they explain the what are the qualifications for Arjuna to hear Bhagavad Gita. So Baldev Vidya Bhushan explains, I think, 4 to 6 qualifications. So one qualification he explains is that Arjuna had internal and external sense control. Shama and Dama. Kimno Rajena Govinda Kimboger Jivite Nava Yesha Marte Kankshitamno Rajyam Boga Sukanicha. Like, what is the use of this kingdom, wealth and enjoyment? So Arjuna exhibited Shama and Dama. He shows control of the senses and mind. And another qualification of Arjuna is that he exhibited indifference to enjoyment of this life and enjoyment of the next life. He didn't want to, Krishna said that if you get killed in the battle, you will go to heaven. If you win the battle, you will get a kingdom. But Arjuna said, I am neither interested in going to heaven, nor am I interested in actually in this kingdom. Api trailokya rajyasya heto kimnu mahi krite. So he said that even if I get an unrivaled kingdom in all the 3 planetary systems, I am not actually interested in that kingdom. So he exhibited complete indifference to enjoyment of this life and the next life. And another qualification is that Arjuna had the qualification of titiksha, because Arjuna said that I am ready to actually lead the life of a beggar. Baikshyam apiha loke. How does that verse begin? Shreyo boktum baikshyam api gurun hatvahi mahanubahan shreyo boktum baikshyam apiha loke. So he said that hatvartha kamams guruni haiva bunjiya bogan rudira pradigdan. So he said that actually how can I actually kill my elders they are actually supposed to be worshipped using flowers. Instead, I want to lead the life of a beggar as a renunciant. Actually, this statement is a very strong statement, because just to understand the gravity of Arjuna's statement, when Narada Muni talks about the Varnashram perspective, when he talks about the duties, traditional duties of a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra, and then he talks about the duties of a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra in an emergency situation, in the seventh canto. So in an emergency situation, sometimes a Kshatriya may play the role of a Brahmana or Vaishya like that. And then he says that even in an emergency situation, what a person should not do. So he explains that in the case of a Kshatriya, even in an emergency situation, one should never accept charity from others. One should never beg from others. So, because Arjuna is, at that time the Varnashram system was actually very much intact. So at that time, for Arjuna to make a statement, like to lead the life of a beggar, which is not allowed even in an emergency situation, that means like how much Arjuna was in such a lamentable situation, how much Arjuna did not want to fight the battle. So this, because when a person begs, sometimes he will meet with people who will actually insult him, who will criticize him, who will neglect him. So in order to go through all those situations, one needs to have tremendous tolerance. So therefore, this statement of Arjuna shows his tolerance. And the fourth quality of Arjuna is that his deep faith in the Guru. Karpanya dosho upakata svabhava prichyamitvam dharma samuda cheta yat shreyastam nishchitam bruhitanme shishyastegam shadimantvam prapannam. He said that now I am a disciple surrendered unto you, please instruct me. So Baldev Vidya Bhushan says that these four qualifications of Arjuna made him eligible for receiving knowledge from Krishna. And then he says that because Arjuna had such kind of detachment of the enjoyment of this world and the next world, which is a very high degree of detachment, so therefore Krishna spoke the Gita in the Upanishadic language. So Bhagavad Gita is not only called as Gita Upanishad, it gives the essence of the Upanishads, but Krishna also spoke in the Upanishadic language because Arjuna is having such kind of detachment. In the traditionally, the Vedas are actually divided into four sections. Brahmanas are not the person Brahmana, it refers to a particular section of the Brahmanas which are meant for the Brahmacharis. Samhitas are meant for the Grahasthas. Aranyakas are meant for the Vanaprasthas. And Upanishads are meant for the Sannyasis. So, because Arjuna had exhibited such kind of detachment, Krishna is speaking the Gita in a Upanishadic language, but the purpose of Gita is to engage Arjuna in the battle, but is giving that message in the Upanishadic language because Arjuna is having that kind of mindset. So that Upanishadic language, we see Krishna speaking in different verses that one of the characteristics of the Upanishadic language is that when Krishna says that nasato vidyade bhavo na bhavo vidyate tataha ubayorapi drishtontas tvanayo tatva darshibihi. The seers of the truth have concluded that the body is temporary and the soul is eternal. Like quoting the rishis, this is like a characteristic of a Upanishadic language. Antavanta ime deha nityas yukta sharirinaha. Uktaha means Krishna says, it is said in the Shrutis that the body is temporary, soul is eternal. So this is like a characteristic of Upanishadic language. And another verse is that, na jayate mriyate va kadachi nayam bhutva bhavita vana bhuyaha. Ajo nitya shashvato yam purano na hanyate hanyamane sharire. So this is a very similar verse, similar to a verse in the Katha Upanishad, na hanyate hanyamane sharire. So he is also speaking a similar Upanishadic verse in order to give the message to Arjuna, because he is having a sense of detachment. And also the 13th chapter also, Krishna speaks in the Upanishadic language in an indirect manner. Sarvata pani padamta sarvatokshi shiro mukam. So we see, like we are discussing with the devotees a few weeks back. So the original student of Gita, because he exhibited such a kind of detachment, Krishna spoke in the Upanishadic language. But Mahaprabhu has given order to us that whomever you meet, give Krishna Upadesh. Yare deko tarega Krishna Upadesh. But the present day students whom we are expected to teach Gita, they don't have any qualification in one sense, anyway close to the qualifications exhibited by Arjuna, the original student of Gita. Arjuna had such kind of detachment, but in Kali Yuga, the conditioned soul is actually deeply rooted in enjoying the sense objects. Like one purport, Hridayan Maharaj says that, and he explains that, Maya Mrigam Daita Yebsitam Anvadavat. So he says that conditioned soul is running after the latest up-to-date sense gratification. I was hearing from one devotee that there is a website called as youpartyvedrive.com. It means like they are making innovative ways that how a person can continue to enjoy, because there is a rule that you cannot drive the vehicle with in an intoxicated state. So how people can facilitate their drinking without worrying about who will drive. So they have created a website, youpartyvedrive.com. You just call us, then we will come and actually take you. So this is the, so conditioned soul is deeply rooted in enjoyment, but we are expected to teach Gita because that is Mahaprabhu's instruction. So therefore, so when we have to teach Gita to such an audience, our language will be definitely radically different from the original speaker of the Gita. The original speaker of the Gita, Krishna spoke in Upanishadic language, but we will have to use lot of innovative techniques and in such a way that it will actually connect with the minds of the present day students, present day people of Kali Yuga. So therefore, we have to understand this principle. And another thing is that when Arjuna actually surrendered to Krishna, Krishna actually smiles at Arjuna. Tamuvacha Rishikesha Prakasan Iva Bharata Senayor Ubayor Madhya Prasidantam Idam Vacha. So Krishna smiled at Arjuna. So the Acharyas explained that what are the different reasons for Krishna smiling at Arjuna. So because Arjuna was lamenting like anything, Krishna was smiling in order to lighten the mood of Arjuna. And another reason Krishna smiled at Arjuna is that Krishna smiled in order to show that actually the subject matter which I am going to speak, you can easily understand. Although the subject matter is very light miles away, that Krishna speaks about the grave topics as the preceptor does in the beginning in allowing us to believe that perfection is almost within our grasp. Although it may be lifetimes away. The perfection may be lifetimes away. It may be like light miles away, lifetimes away. But Krishna wants to actually give a feeling to Arjuna that, oh, you can actually perfect very soon. So in order to give that feeling, actually Krishna is smiling. And another reason Krishna is smiling at Arjuna is that Krishna is telling to Arjuna that although you have surrendered to me as a disciple, but still I will instruct you, I remain as your friend. So in this way, Krishna is actually, in that sense, Krishna is, although Krishna chastises Arjuna, but still in a friendly mood. So Acharya says that in the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, the disciple sees the guru as a dearmost friend, and the guru teaches the disciple like a friendly elder. So here the Krishna smile indicates the union of friendship and servitude that characterizes Arjuna's love for him. This is spoken by Bhakti Rakshak Sridhara Maharaj. And then another reason why Krishna smiled at Arjuna is that Krishna actually wanted to laugh at Arjuna. But it would be completely insensitive to Arjuna's situation. So therefore, Krishna suppressed his laughter and he simply smiled at Arjuna, Prahasan. So, we see, just trying to extend the same point that how, in the modern day students of the Gita and the original student of the Gita, how we have to speak the Gita in a language by which will connect to the audience and give the same message. And therefore we need to adopt different strategies according to the different audience. Like in the Tattva Sandarbha, when Jiva Goswami explains about the way he is going to write the Sandarbha, he mentions that in the Sandarbhas, many times I will be quoting the statements of Sridhar Swami, the original commentator of Srimad Bhagavatam. So there he says that I will only quote those statements of Sridhar Swami which are in agreement with the conclusions of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Not all the statements of Sridhar Swami. So when some scholars, when they read this statement of Jiva Goswami, they question the chastity of Jiva Goswami to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because they say that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has accepted Sridhar Swami as the highest authority in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He said that anybody who does not Swami, I consider him as a prostitute. But Jiva Goswami, if he is the follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, why is he not accepting all the statements of Sridhar Swami? Why is he accepting only some statements of Sridhar Swami? This shows that he is not completely loyal to the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In this way, they question Jiva Goswami's loyalty, but Gopi Parandantra writes in his commentary, he says that when Sridhar Swami, he actually comes in the Advaita Sampradaya, but he is a Vaishnava by heart. If he is not a Vaishnava by heart, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not have accepted Sridhar Swami as authority. He is a Vaishnava, pure Vaishnava by heart, and he wrote a commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam in order to attract the minds of the impersonalists towards the Srimad Bhagavatam. So just we have a soft corner towards suppose we come from a particular school or we from a particular community. We have a soft corner, we want to attract people from our community or people from our country. We want to make them also into devotees. There is a natural human tendency, we want to make, Indians or, from different states we have come or from different, we want to make our college students as devotees. So similarly, Sridhar Swami, he wants to make the other impersonalists into devotees. He wants to attract their minds to Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, as a strategy, in order to attract the minds of the impersonalists toward the Srimad Bhagavatam, sometimes in his commentary, as a strategy, he makes certain statements which will attract their minds. So, Jiva Goswami says that, I will not quote those statements because Jiva Goswami has mentioned right in the beginning of the Sandarbhas that this book is meant for the devotees who have their main desire as service to the Supreme Personality of God. So, Jiva Goswami is writing the Shat Sandarbhas mainly for the devotees. But Sridhar Swami, he wrote his commentary one of his main purposes is to attract the minds of the impersonalists toward the Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore he adopts a certain strategy to attract their minds. But in the case of Jiva Goswami, but his main audience is the devotees. So therefore Jiva Goswami says that, so I will quote only those statements which are in agreement with the conclusion of Srimad Bhagavatam. So just like I was giving an example, it's like we may make chole sabji. So when you make chole sabji for say Kolhapur devotees or Punjabi devotees, you use different masalas. So when you make same chole sabji for Russian devotees or Ukraine devotees, you may use like very less masala or no masala at all. So you may be cooking the same sabji, but depending on the audience, you use like different masala, different spices. So Jiva Goswami, that sense we see that, so understanding his audience, he is not adopting the same strategy. So he understands the mind of Sridhar Swami, so therefore he does not use that strategy. And like another lesson we can learn, the way of Krishna's mood of teacher of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that, Kachideta Shrutam Partha Tvaya Ekagrena Chetasa Kachid Agyana Sammoha Pranashtaste Dhananjaya. He says that, have you heard the Gita attentively with one-pointed attention? Are your doubts dispelled? Is your illusion gone? So we see that Krishna is very much concerned. In fact, Prabhupada writes that Krishna wants to know that if you have not understood the Gita, I am ready to repeat the whole Gita again. So here we can learn Krishna's mood of a responsible teacher. Responsible teacher, that means he is very much concerned that whether Arjuna has understood the subject matter. He is not interfering with Arjuna's choice of Arjuna. He is not interfering with Arjuna's free will as what decision he is going to make. So when a student has not understood the essence, that means the teacher has not discharged his responsibility fully. But if the student has understood the subject matter, but if he is not applying the subject matter, that is his responsibility. From the teacher's responsibility is that, at least he should make sure that the students get the message properly. If the students have not got the message, if they have not understood the subject matter, that means that teacher has not completely discharged his responsibility. So therefore, Krishna wants to know that whether Arjuna has understood the subject matter. If he has not understood, he is ready to repeat it again. And in the case of also in the Bhagavad Gita, Jiva Goswami explains in the Sandarbhas, like what is actually the essence of the Gita. So in order to understand the essence of the book, we have to see the beginning of the book and we have to see the end of the book. He says that the beginning of the book is Ashochyan Anvashochastvam. Why are you lamenting for that which is not worthy of grief? And the end of the book, Sarvadharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Raja Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Moksha Ishyami Ma Shuchaha. Do not lament. So therefore he says, the message of Bhagavad Gita is do not lament or be happy. So in this way, Krishna is actually, this is the essential message of the Gita. When Arjuna when he says that, Nashta Moho Smritir Ladva Tvat Prasadat Mayachyuta, he says that now my illusion is gone, my doubts are dispelled. So one Prabhupada disciple, Jagatarini Mataji, she mentioned that in order to come to the point of Karishye Vachanam Tava, that means now I will do whatever you say, I will follow your instructions, the two main obstacles are illusion and the doubts. Nashta Moho Smritir Ladva Tvat Prasadat Mayanchita Sitosmi Gata Sandeha. Sorry, illusion and doubts. These are the two main obstacles. And the predominant illusion is actually the bodily concept of life. And therefore, Prabhupada's most often quoted verse is actually Dehi nosmi yata dehi. If we see the number of times Prabhupada has quoted this particular verse in his lectures, conversations, the maximum number of times he has quoted this particular verse. But that is the main obstacle for surrendering to Krishna. And another obstacle is doubts. And the doubts can be actually removed by hearing. Maya sakta manaparta yogam yunjan madashaya asam shayam samagrammam yata gyasasi tachrunu. So Krishna says that if you hear from me, your doubts will be completely gone. So therefore, Prabhupada has given lecture on this verse maximum number of times. Almost some 25 lectures Prabhupada has given on this particular verse. So in that way, Prabhupada's preaching in one sense is in according to the mood of Krishna. Where the main two obstacles are bodily concept of life and the doubts. And Prabhupada has emphasized on these two verses, 7.1 and 2.13. And this is what I just wanted to, something which came to my mind. So I'll stop here. So we'll end the class. Rantana Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.